to Shattering Miss. As we were reviewing the news, the last story, I left two insights out that I would like to cover before we turn to Matza. The first is that this cheating showed a complete failure of leadership, according to those politicians in Atlanta who are reviewing it, that hurt thousands of children who might have been promoted to the next grade without meeting basic academic standards. And at the center of this cheating scandal is former Superintendent Beverly Hall. She's at the center of this cheating scandal. Now, she was named 2009 National Superintendent of the Year. Number one school superintendent in 2009. And considered one of the nation's best at running large urban school districts. And she's at the center of the cheating scandal. We have become rotten from the top to the bottom. Now, yesterday, as we were considering matzah, I read a passage that I've spent a little more time on today, and it transitions into a repeat of this concept using slightly different terms. And I want to share it with you again today with the benefit of the Hebrew stems, moods, and conjugations. It reads, 7 days yeast, sa'ar. This is the fungus culture that is used in baking or fermenting. It's from sha'ar, meaning that which is left behind, a remnant. So what God is saying here is that by celebrating these 7 days of unleavened bread with him, today being the last of it this year, that there is nothing left behind. There is no fungus. There's no culture. There's nothing as a remnant, nothing remaining of the sin that is the equivalent of this yeast fungus associated with our souls. So the 7 days is all to remove the yeast or fungus of sin from us with nothing remaining. And so it says, 7 days ye shall not be found. And so what is it talking about here? No, God doesn't have a Gestapo. He doesn't have a religious police. He doesn't have his Malak angels going around house to house saying, uh-oh, I opened a cupboard. I found some yeast there. Bad, bad you. No. This is all very symbolic language that is designed to drive home the purpose of this day and of this week. And it's so it says, 7 days, there shall be nothing left of this fungus of yeast. It shall not be found any longer in your homes, in your families, in your dwelling places. So the purpose of matzah is described in these words. It's to completely remove, so that it is no longer found, any vestiges of corruption associated with our souls. Then God uses some very interesting terminology here to describe what happens if you choose not to participate in matzah. He said, indeed, any soul, now this is no longer an individual. Souls don't eat, right? Bodies eat. Souls don't eat. So now what he's doing here is associating souls, which is the part of us that is where the yeast is no longer found if we participate in this invitation to meet with God. He's equating the symbolism here and the consequence now to our souls. So a soul who consumes. So you now at this point have to recognize souls don't eat. So it's now about consuming that which is corrupting. In fact, akal, which is the Hebrew word for consumes or eats or devours, is consumed by, was written as in the participle form. We don't see a lot of verbs, and this is the first, this is the operative verb here. We don't see a lot of verbs written in the participle form. what that essentially says is that this verb serves as an adjective. So it is modifying the subject in particular here. And what it's also was written in the passive, which says that people are ultimately influenced by what they consume. Now, this is a powerful thought. It's something that I've long viewed as the meaning behind the dietary instructions that Yahweh gave us. You know, he listed a bunch of things. And he said, if you're going to eat from the waters, eat things with gills, not other things, which would be, for example, shellfish. Because, as it turns out, the lobster, which is the old sea roach, and shellfish are cleansing animals. They consume, if you will, the debris or the rubbish of the ocean. They're not nearly as healthy. That's why people get sick so often on shellfish, as fish with gills. And he goes on. He talks about things like swine, for example. Don't eat swine because its whole metabolic process of when it eats, it makes it, first of all, it eats garbage, pigs do, and second, they don't process their food the same way, and so they're exceedingly susceptible to disease like trichinosis. And then he goes on and he has things like, and I don't want you eating vultures, because what are they doing? They're also feeding on the death and disease. And so, while everything that he said that was good to eat and not good to eat has scientifically been shown that his advice was perfectly sound, and therefore good as a heavenly father, that the primary message there wasn't about what you should or should not eat. Don't make a religion out of what you eat. The primary message there is that a soul that consumes rubbish, a soul that consumes sin, a soul that consumes religion and politics. Now, remember, Yahusha on the Sea of Galilee said that the yeast represents religion and politics. Those souls who consume these things become these things. That's how the participle form is used in this case. Extraordinarily important insight. That means when you look at the food instructions that exist in the Torah, you will gain more from them if you recognize that God is telling you that if you eat rubbish, you become rubbish. If you devour religion, you are then looked at as being corrupted by religion. If you are overtly political, then you are going to be looked at. You're going to be corrupted by that politic. So you become what you eat, is the message. So he says any soul who consumes soured food or bread baked with yeast, this is makmeset. It's an interesting term, and that it means that which sours, that which embitters, that which leavens in terms of permeating the whole. It's a byproduct of chemetz, which is to sour, to grieve, or to oppress, to be embittered, cruel, or ruthless. So, God is making this next point is that if you consume things that will sour you, if you consume a fungus, which is the yeast, if you consume that which embitters religion and politics, if you consume those things, you're going to become those things. And the whole purpose of matzah is to remove those things from you. You know, no yeast, no fungus is going to be found in your home, in your household, in your family, if you keep the meeting with God. But if you don't, he's just telling you, you are going to become what you eat. Whatever you devour, that is what you are. You know, most religious people identify themselves by their religion first and foremost. In politics, most political people identify themselves with their politics first and foremost. They've become what they consumed. Then God says that here's the consequence. You'll be cut off and banished from the community of witnesses. You're not going to be Yah's witness if you are religious, if you're political, if you're soured with this fungus. So you're going to be cut off and banished from the community of witnesses, the Edah, of Yisrael. Yisrael means individuals who strive, struggle, persist, engage, and endure with God. And then he wants to make the point perfectly clear. This is also including foreigners and natives of the land. So that means that the only way that you can look at Yisrael here, because it includes foreigners and natives, is that Yisrael is not defining a nation. It is not defining a racial group. It is defining a mindset. It is defining a community of individuals who engage and endure with God. And that community, all of us, either accept or reject. We are either Yisrael, and we're engaging and enduring with God, or we're cut off. It's the choice that we make relative not only to the covenant, but matzah. Now, this is really important to God, so just to make certain that we understand it, following Shemoth names Exodus 12:19, of course, is Shemoth names Exodus 12:20. And it presents a very similar idea, using very similar terms, but from a slightly different perspective. God says, any soured food or baked bread baked with yeast, this is mak eshet again. So any soured food or bread baked with yeast, anything that sours, leavens, which means permeates, and embitters as a byproduct of the fungus that is known as yeast, from this concept is from chametz, which means to sour, to grieve, or to oppress, and it means also to be embittered, to be cruel, and to be ruthless. Of course, if you look at man's ruthlessness and cruelty, most of man's ruthlessness and cruelty have been associated with political schemes, religious schemes, military schemes, and often even with economic schemes. You know, the very things that we talk about in this program that we're trying to dispel the myths of and to expose and condemn, these are the very things that God is saying that you ought not consume. Don't be soured with this fungus that permeates, that embitters, that is cruel, that is ruthless, that sours you, causing you to grieve. Now we'll return to this particular statement when Shattering Myths continues after the commercial break. To Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yana. We're considering Yah's initial presentation of matzah. It appears in Shemoth, which means names. Shem is the Hebrew word for name. Shemoth is names plural. It is a book that has been changed to the Greek word for departure, Exodus. We base our theater exits on that concept. But this was not written in Greek. It wasn't spoken in Greek. And so to apply a Greek title to something written in Hebrew is a bit perplexing as to why that would occur. Now, I think I know the reason it has occurred, but there is no reason that we should promote the mythology that this is a Greek document. It isn't. It's a Hebrew document, and the Hebrew name for the document is Shemoth, names. It is called names because it introduces us to some very important names. This is where Yahweh introduces himself by name to Moshe and tells Moshe to tell the children of Israel that Yahweh, their God, has sent him. It also introduces the name of Moshe himself, which means to draw out. Moshe is the one who draws us out of the crucible of Egypt. Egypt is being positioned here as the very embodiment of this yeast. Egypt was the most political, the most overtly religious, the most economically immoral, and a amongst the most militant countries on the planet at this time. It may have been at this very moment the most religious, political, militant, and economically immoral place on earth. And that is what is being removed. That is what Yahweh is taking the people away from. So always context, context, context. Remember the context of this discussion. So reading this statement again, God says, any soured food or bread baked with yeast, you shall not make a habit of consuming. Lo akal here, lo is the negation, akal is the word for to consume or to eat, was written in the call imperfect. It's the same stem in conjugation that is ascribed to the seven instructions that are on the second of the two tablets the very presentation of these tablets here in Exodus, in Shemoth, where God, with each of those seven instructions on the second of the two tablets, tells us that we should not make a habit of adultery. We should not make a habit of murder. We should not make a habit of bearing false witness. God knows full well that we're incapable of going through life never doing anything wrong. But what he's saying is this, the habitual behavior, the continual behavior of doing things which are counterproductive to you is a really bad idea. So this was written in the call imperfect. So it says that any soured food or bread baked with yeast, anything that embitters, that grieves, that oppresses, you should not make it a habit of consuming. In any of your dwelling places or communities, you should actually and consistently eat matzah, which is unyeasted bread. So, bread is the symbol of saved souls because it's the purified grain, represents those souls that are harvested by God at this time, and yeast is the thing that can corrupt them. And again, God is taking his people out of the most corrupt place on earth, Egypt. So, it is in that light that we need to understand his testimony. And really, there's the whole interesting concept, too, is that by eating, consuming the things that were awry in Egypt, politics and religion and economic schemes and military attitudes, that we become those things. We are polluted by those things. We are soured by those things. And the purpose of unleavened bread, just as the children of Israel were released from those things, freed from them, God is freeing our soul from religion and politics, from the corruption of our world and human institutions. Now, this known, I want to continue a little bit with the Shemoth account as it presents the first occurrence of matzah, so that we also have a perspective on other things God had to say about this day. He reads, his account reads, based upon what had happened, the Egyptians were resolute and severe with the people, hurriedly sending them out of the land, saying, because we shall all die. So the people took and carried off their dough before it was leavened, before it was soured and embittered by yeast, having their kneading bowls bound up in their garments and on their shoulders. So, again, the context of what is happening here. Just as the fungus of yeast is being removed from our souls, the children of Israel are instantly being separated from the place of such corruption, Egypt. Virtually. To Shattering Myths, we're considering Yah's portrayal of the first Exodus. It puts everything associated with matzah into to context, because it was from Egypt that they were leaving, and therefore we have that which sours, that which embitters, this which permeates everything in a society defined. Look at Egypt. The Pharaoh called himself God. He was the son of the sun. The religion and the political mechanisms of Egypt were one and the same. Egypt was an extraordinarily tight-controlled dictatorship that was facilitated by a blending of cleric and king. Their religion was almost identical to the Babylonian religion, except the names changed. The characters were all the same. Same trinity, same cast of characters in the Egyptian religion as found in the Babylonian religion. And it was extraordinarily militaristic. And so, and not only that, their economy was facilitated by slave labor. The Egyptians didn't work during this period of time. They made others work for them. So it is this economic scheme, this integration of religion and politics that God is saying, I'm taking you away from. That is the yeast that has been removed from them. So the Egyptians said, yeah, go. We're letting them go. And now there's a hurriedly aspect of this too. Said, you know, they hurriedly went out of the land, and that they left so quickly that their dough was not leavened in their kneading bowls, which were bound up on their garments and placed on their shoulders. What's the hurry here? You know, God said eternal. Why hurry? Well, what happened the previous night? Passover, right? Those who celebrate Passover in accordance with God's instructions become immortal. What happens to somebody who's immortal and still soured, their soul still corrupted with the fungus of religion and politics? They're eternally separated from them. They end up in Sheol. And so God is saying, don't tarry here. Don't linger at this point. Recognize that with Pesach, you need matzah. Don't wait. Life is short. Now that you have become immortal, those of you who observe Pesach, you need to be cleansed of sin. You need to be cleansed and separated from religion and politics and economic and military schemes. So the testimony of Yahweh goes on. In this manner, the children of Yisrael observed and accomplished the word. They profited from the word. They acted and engaged based upon the word. And they asked for and received clothing and cooking vessels, objects of gold and silver. And Yahweh bestowed and granted a favorable acceptance for the family in the sight of the Egyptians. You know, the Egyptians realized, hey, we were wrong. You know, and for all of these 400 years that you've been enslaved by us and worked for us for nothing here, at least as a token of our appreciation, maybe we can do at least something to show that we've been wrong. And so they left Egypt under a favorable circumstance, which is something that God wanted, because the last thing he wanted is his people distracted by Egypt going forward. The next line leads, the children of Yisrael set off from Ramesses. Now, the reason I'm reading that to you is that prior to decloding the Rosetta Stone and finding a stone that had Egyptian hieroglyphs and Greek written side by side, until that time, no one knew how to read, therefore pronounce the names of any of the places or characters in Egypt. We could not read the language, which means we could not pronounce the names. And yet here is a document that dates back now 2,500 years ago. And in this document, the name Ramesses was written phonetically and accurately. Now that is 2,400 years before man using other devices, linguistic devices, would know how to pronounce the Pharaoh's name. But now, also keep in mind that the children of Israel were setting out from Ramesses, which means the son of the sun. That was the place, not the Pharaoh. You know, there were three Ramesses in Egypt. None of them are the Pharaoh of the Exodus. But the Pharaoh referred to himself as the son of the sun, and the Pharaoh's retreat was in Goshen, which is the place from which the children of Israel fled. There have been countless digs in the tells there in the Goshen area, and every aspect of the scriptural story of the harassment of the Israelites has been confirmed, even right down to this, the smallest details. Yah's story, historical portrait of what happened here, so that we might understand the purpose of matzah, is confirmed by archaeology. Now, they were leaving Ramesses, this religious hub where the king was considered to be the son of the sun, and heading to Sukkoth. Sukkoth is from Sukkah, which means the shelter, the tent, and the tabernacle, the dwelling place of God, to the promised land. And it was with about 600,000 individuals on foot, besides little children. Six is the number of men. God is saying that now with 600,000 of them and God, who is one, that they are going to achieve God's ultimate desire, which is for us to live together. That's his promise to us. That's why these numbers are as they are. Then in the 39th verse, 12th chapter, Shemoth, we read, "They baked the dough, which was brought out of Egypt, as flat loaves, unyeasted, and indeed there was no yeast added, because they had been expelled from the crucible, and they would not have prevailed if they had delayed. Moreover, they had not fashioned and prepared any provision." Now, if you just read the words and you say, all right, so they were in a hurry, so they left Egypt, and they ate flatbread. Let's go on with the next story. Why is God telling us this story? What value is this story to us if it's simply a history lesson of they left Egypt and they were in a hurry, and they would not have prevailed if they had taken time to add a little yeast to their bread so that the bread would rise before it was baked? No. The story is shared for a meaning. You see, they were leaving the most religious and political, the most militaristic and corrupt economic place on earth. That's what was leaving. And so the last thing God wanted is that for them to take any of that corruption with them. So there was no yeast added to the bread. They were not going to continue to consume corruption. They were now liberated from the corrupting force of religion and politics, of economic and military schemes. And it was talked about in the sense of dough, because dough is comprised of crushed grain. These souls, these Israelites, had been crushed under the toil of slave labor in Egypt. And God was now cleansing them, making them pure, which is the symbol of those who are saved, who are harvested into God's home. He also says that they were brought out of Egypt. They didn't free themselves from this crucible. God freed them from this crucible. He led them out. He is the one who paid the price to lead us into eternal life, to lead us away from religion and politics, away from our souls being corrupted, to lead us to his home to be his children. He's doing the leading. We're doing the following. We're walking in his footsteps, hand in hand. So that's why there was no yeast added. They had been cast out, driven out, expelled from the crucible, from Mitzrayim, from the very place of religious and political, economic and military oppression. They were now freed of it. And God says they would not have prevailed if they had lingered. Now, could God have held off the Egyptians and Pharaoh's angry pursuit? Sure. But what God is saying here is that if you hesitate too long to come to know him, come to embrace him, putting your hand in his, letting him lead you out away from these things, if you linger too long, you won't prevail. Because the longer we linger in religion and politics, the more corrupt we become, the less receptive we become, the less open we are to God's direction and teaching. When we linger, it becomes too late. That's the reason why God constantly encourages parents to share the Torah with their children. They're more receptive. The longer we linger, the less likely it is that we will prevail. And so God underscores all of this by saying they had not prepared any provision. They were going out into to cross Sinai, this foreboding desert, and then to cross the Gulf of Aqaba, Bay of the Red Sea, and going into desolate, the most desolate place of Arabia, without any provision. Now that speaks volumes. If you want to benefit from Pesach and Matzah, if you want to no longer be mortal and become immortal, if you want to go from being flawed to being perfected by God, if you want to be part of His family, then you don't prepare the provision for the way He has prepared and provided the provision. All we do at these parties is we accept what He is offering. We are not capable of contributing to our salvation. Once you say, God, I'm willing to trust and rely on you, then He provides all of the provisions. It is interesting here as we continue to study this story that we're told that the time interval of the children of Israel in which they remained in the realm of the crucible of Egypt was 400 years and 30 years. Why was it broken out that way? Because for 30 years, they were considered amongst the most important people in Egypt, for a story we'll share in a moment, and then for 400 years, they were enslaved. Four is an extraordinarily important number, as is 40. We'll be back in a moment. Returning to Shemoth, the Exodus account, 1240, we read of time being broken down into two segments of years. One was 400 years and one was 30 years. It was 400 years that represented the time that the children of Israel were tested. 40 is the number of a period of testing. When we understand the importance of 440, 400, then we come to understand God's timeline, because it is 40 yovel that separate the great events in terms of Yahweh's schedule. This is broken into two periods, because there was 30 years where, as Yosef became the vicar of Egypt for having correctly not only interpreted the Pharaoh's dream, but having prepared Egypt so that there were not devastating consequences of the famine that would be induced by the ill-behaving Nile River. It was 30 years where the children of Israel were greatly esteemed and appreciated in Egypt, and then 400 years where they were tested severely as slaves of this political and religious milieu. And then it came to pass that that at the completion of 400 years and 30 years, this one very substantial and foundational day, it came to be that all who were willing to follow the instructions of Yahweh came out from the realm of the crucible of Egypt. So coming out of this corruptive realm, this crucible, this place of testing, is being denoted as the very substantial, essential, and foundational day. It's the day, though, of course, that Christians pay no attention to. And yet it is, we've been told, now both in Kara and in Shemoth, it is the most essential day. Hashem, meaning the skeletal day, the very day that everything hangs, that is given form and substance. That is the nature of this day. And it's the day where we were separated from the corrupting influences of politics and religion. Now, who was separated? on this substantial day, Shabbat is used here again. Very interesting term. And because of the nature of Shabbat, the way that it needs to be developed here is either you can say that all of the hosts, which would be of Yahweh, came out, which is kind of an odd concept. Even though it was a lot of people, the hosts of Yahweh are always depicted as his malach, as his spiritual messengers. So here, when it's applied to people, we need to define the term. So it was all of those who were willing to follow the instructions of Yahweh who came out. If you weren't willing to trust Yahweh, if you weren't willing to follow his lead, if you didn't want to put your hand in his and walk with him to the promised land, you weren't leaving. So it's a fascinating use of the term there. Now, the next statement is incredibly telling. In literally reading it, you would read it as it was a night vigil for him, for Yahweh, to bring them out. Now, if you just leave it at that and said, all right, it was a night's vigil for him, for Yahweh, to bring them out from the land of Egypt, from the realm of this crucible of human oppression, you may not think much of it other than, okay, well, it was a full moon because Pesach is always, and matzah are always celebrated on a full moon. That's why right now there's a half moon that is waning because we've completed the 1 week now of matzah. But what happened that night? What happened in the actual fulfillment of this promise? It was the longest night in universal history. This was the night that he, Yahweh, his soul, went into Sheol on our behalf to redeem us, to cleanse us of the fungus of religion and politics. So it's a night that he himself, Yahweh, held this evening vigil to save us, to purify us. He did this protective vigil so that we could approach him, Yahweh. So a very fascinating presentation of truthful then, truthful down the road, truthful now. God is again equating the journey associated with matzah with not only its purpose, but how he himself fulfilled it. The fact that they walked at night under the light of a full moon is meaningful only in the sense of what God did for us the night after Passover, where his body was sacrificed so that we might live, and his soul was sacrificed so we might be redeemed. I am Yada. This has been Shattering Myths.
Radio advertising on GCN, the Genesis Communications Network, is simple, affordable, and reaches millions. How do we do it? Let's break it down. First, the simple part. You tell us about your business.